Welcome to the best podcast in the history of mankind. It's Monty's Rockcast. And now, here's your host, Monty Coleman.
Hey, 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 it's Monty. Welcome to the Rockcast, where I will tell you what music to listen to, what you should be watching on TV, and I might even tell you how to peel a hard-boiled egg. And unfortunately, I have to start this podcast out on kind of a bummer, because recently, as everybody knows by now, Charlie Kirk was assassinated, and I've got a few thoughts. And when I was planning out what I was going to say, I thought for a while I was going to have to make this be a parental guidance type of show. Because I was so angry, I thought this rant was going to be filled with F-bombs. But after thinking about it, I'm going to try and control myself the best I can. So let me just start by saying that Charlie Kirk wasn't somebody I listened to every day. But I had watched several of his debates on YouTube. And from everything I ever saw, he was just kind of a common sense guy. He was obviously very intelligent, and he'd ask college students stuff like, can you define a woman? And after they gave some kind of retarded answer, he'd just tell them why he didn't agree. And I never, not once, thought he was being mean or hateful. He was just a good Christian guy who was a lot smarter than they were. But as we've come to expect, when the left doesn't agree with something you have to say, they accuse you of being a fascist or a Nazi or Hitler. And of course, they accuse Charlie of being that because, you know, he liked Trump. Still, I never thought they would try to kill Charlie Kirk. And when I heard he'd been shot, I thought, well, hopefully the doctors will help him and save him and he'll be okay. But about an hour later, I'm driving home from the store and I heard on the radio that he had died. And I'm not one to cry when a celebrity dies. Like, I was upset when John Lennon died, but I don't remember crying. But that day in the car, I just started weeping. And the weird thing is, I was still crying like 2 days later. And obviously part of it was because we'd lost a great man in Charlie Kirk, because he was a great spokesman for conservatism, and my heart really broke for his wife and his kids. But I think another thing that really bothered me was just how sick this world has become. I mean, the media has been lying to people for years. And so many people have bought into it. And I just could not believe some of the reactions that people had toward Charlie after he died. Like, there were people on Facebook saying that he deserved it. And over the years, I've just tried to get to the point with most people where I'm like, well, you believe what you want to believe, I'll believe what I believe. And we don't have to agree on everything. But there were just some people who crossed the line. And there was this one guy who was on my friends list on Facebook, and he's an artist, and in the past he would post pictures of his prints, and I would like them and encourage him. And I would do that despite the fact that he was a radical leftist. But when I saw this guy post minutes after Charlie had died that Charlie basically had been asking for it, and that you right-wingers better wise up, I just said, you know, I've had enough, and I deleted him, I blocked his ass, and I will no longer see his posts ever again. And in the following days, I saw all kinds of posts from people on TikTok and YouTube basically celebrating that Charlie had been murdered. And I found that incredibly sickening, and not only that, kind of scary. Like, how truly sick has this world become? But I also had this thought that maybe through this tragedy, people will start to wake up and realize how truly demented that the left has become. I mean, these people are evil. And yeah, I get that there's evil people in both parties on both sides. But I truly believe that the liars in the Democratic Party and in the media have brought a lot of this hatred on. And they've just told people over and over that if you're a part of MAGA or you're a conservative, that you're somehow a fascist or a racist and you hate black people or Hispanics and that we're all white supremacists. And of course, all that is bullshit. And so what's the solution? Well, I've got a couple of ideas. First one is, let's make the words fascist or Nazi or Hitler kind of like the N-word. To the point where if somebody on CNN says that somebody's a fascist, then they get ostracized. And they lose their job based on the fact that they use the F-word, fascist. Or make the second N-word be Nazi. Kind of like black people are the only people that can say the N-word and get away with it. Well, unless you are a registered member of the Nazi Party, you are not allowed to call somebody else a Nazi or Hitler. And maybe that way some of these assholes on MSNBC will just stop saying that stuff. But of course, that will not happen, so here's my suggestion. How about we start encouraging people to really start seeking the truth? Instead of listening to your college professors or watching these networks like CNN, start looking at some alternative sources. And I'll be the first to admit that when I was in my 20s, I did not care about politics. And I couldn't have told you the difference between the right or the left. But when I was around 30, I started getting interested as to how it all worked. And I started caring about my life and about my country. And so I started listening to some conservative radio shows and I started learning how corrupt the media is and how corrupt a lot of politicians are. But these days, there are just so many podcasts out there. There are tons of shows on YouTube. And Rumble, and there's a lot of really smart people who are not evil, and they will tell you things that mainstream media will never speak of. And so if you've only been watching MSNBC or even Fox News for all these years, please go and watch some of these other shows that are out there. And like I say, here are some of my suggestions. And on most of these shows, they don't just cover politics, they cover a lot of other stuff. And some of my favorites are Steven Crowder, it's called Louder with Crowder. Another one is Matt Walsh, and I know you've probably heard bad stuff about both of those guys, but trust me, they're great. I also love a guy named Mark Dice, he does the show from his kitchen. And they're usually short segments on YouTube that last about 10 to 15 minutes long. Now, if you like sports and you also are interested in politics, check out Jason Whitlock with his show Fearless. He's a black Christian guy, and he's actually really hated by liberal blacks. And it's mostly because he's way too honest. I also like Clay Travis. He's also on YouTube and does a lot of sports and politics mixture. And I also watch a guy named Ryan Cannell. He has a show called Sports Wars. And I watch him almost every day. He is awesome. He pulls no punches and he calls people out on their bull crap. And finally, my favorite of all time, Adam Carolla. And he is not a Christian. In fact, I think he's an atheist. But the thing I love about him the most is that, number one, he's hilarious. But two, he just approaches everything with common sense. And I don't think he even claims to be a conservative or a Republican. He just looks at it and says, does this make sense or is it just stupid? And the only thing I don't like about Adam Carolla is that he's still friends with Jimmy Kimmel. And I just don't understand that. But I'll get to more on Jimmy Kimmel later.
He's a piece of excrement.
And just one more guy I will suggest that's kind of like Adam Carolla, and that's Anthony Cumia. I love how blunt he is and politically incorrect. And he's had segments titled Axl Rose Sucks and Robert De Niro is an Asshole. So there you go. There's some alternative shows that aren't completely corrupted by left-wing propaganda. But that's my political rant for the day. You may not agree with me and think I'm an idiot, but that's fine. I probably think the same thing about you. All right, let's move forward with something a little less serious and possibly a little more entertaining. And I will get started with a listener email from Gary Robb in Baltimore. And Gary's a great guy. I've known him for a long time. And he came out to the studio in Houston while we were doing vocals. So he is a hardcore GC fan. And he also is commissioning me to eventually do all the members of Iron Maiden.
Gary is a very weird guy.
But Gary had a question for me, and it's, what's up, Monty?
What a great question.
Ah, well, thanks for asking, Gary. You know, man, it's actually going pretty well right now. And I gotta say, a lot of it has to do with a lot of you listeners out there. Because as I've told you on the last couple of episodes, Alex and I are gonna try and move back to Houston. And we're planning to do that around mid-December, and I told you we could really use your help. And I said if you could go to my website, montycalvinart.com, and buy a print or a painting or refrigerator magnets or all of the above, we could put that toward a moving fund. And a lot of you did just that, and Alex and I appreciate it so much. And just in the last couple of months, I've gotten several commissions that really help. A couple of them are family portraits. I don't just do rock stars. I also do specialized things like that for people. And so keep that in mind. I would appreciate you going to my website. We also did something else toward the move since the last episode. And that was Alex started a GoFundMe. And, you know, it's kind of humbling because I don't like asking people for donations. But she thought it'd be a good idea, and so she put it up a couple of weeks ago. And so far, man, it's been going great. A lot of you have been so kind and so generous, and we really appreciate it a lot. And it's really going to help stuff like the moving truck rental and getting into an apartment or house in Houston. And as most of you probably know, if you've ever moved before, it's quite an undertaking. And so, no pressure, but if you feel like helping us out, we have that GoFundMe. And what you do is you go to the GoFundMe website and search for Alex Kaufman. It's spelled A-L-I-X-K-A-U-F-M-A-N. And once again, it's Alex Kaufman. Or if this is easier, you could go to my Facebook page and there should be a link on my feed. And it should take you straight there where you can donate whatever you want. And if you want to make a slightly bigger donation, I will trade you for some artwork. All you got to do is message me and tell me what you want on my website and I will just send it right to you. But the plan is to get to Houston, we can't afford to live in Colorado anymore, and hopefully get some housing that's a little more affordable, and I'll also be able to get back there to play more with Galactic Cowboys, and hopefully we can do some more recording. And speaking of recording, we're still working on a new album. And we are presently in the mixing stage of that, and I have some really good news. It is sounding great. And it's being mixed by Landis Chisenhall in San Antonio at Cibolo Studio. And Ben and I are not able to go to San Antonio, but Dane has. And what happens is Landis and Dane will start mixing. And once they get a song to the point where it's sounding really good, they will send Ben and I an MP3. And then we listen to it and we give them our thoughts. And if we hear something that needs to be changed, we'll tell them, like if we want something to come up or something to come down, we just tell Dane and then he relays the message to Landis and they work on it a little more. And we all just keep making adjustments until we're all happy with it. And so far, we've only got about three or four songs done, but we're just ecstatic about how it's going. And the cool thing is that none of these songs are mastered yet. And so after they do get mastered, they're going to sound even better. And so what I'd like to do right now is play you some of the snippets from the songs that have been mixed so far. And these are just some teasers to kind of let you know what's going on. And once again, keep in mind, these aren't mastered yet. But as Ben would say, we're still in the kitchen cooking on it. But here's a little appetizer.
Isn't that just sick?
This is huge.
Massive.
Yeah, I am loving this stuff. And I gotta say, I think this may end up being my favorite Galactic album. And I'm not gonna go there yet and say this is the best album we've ever done. I mean, I think it could be, but, you know, I'm just going to say right now, I think it may be my favorite when it's all said and done. And just speaking personally, since the inception of this band back in 89, I've been longing and searching for this perfect blend of heaviness and catchiness. And I really think we're capturing that this time. So I'm really excited about this, can't wait for everyone to hear it. Unfortunately, I can't really give you a release date yet, because I don't even know when we're going to be done mixing and mastering it yet. But I will tell you that it's going to be worth the wait.
I'm not so sure.
All right, let's do some more listener questions. And I got one from my friend on Facebook, Corey Rogers. And he said, "Hey, Monty, you might have covered this in the past on Rockcasts, but what kind of regular jobs have you had over the years, and what was your favorite and most dreaded of them?" Well, thanks for the question, Corey. You know, I started working in my dad's upholstery shop when I was in high school. And it wasn't really because I wanted to. I would say, "Dad, why do I have to do this?" And he'd say, "Because I need your help and you need to learn how to work." And a lot of what I did was pulling old rusty staples out of furniture. And that wasn't a lot of fun, but my dad was really good at upholstery. People would bring in these old crappy looking couches and chairs and he'd just make them look brand new. And I ended up working for him for years, and along the way he kind of taught me how to do it myself. But I just never really loved doing it, and so I just never pursued it as a full-time career. But there's been times when I actually wish that I had, because he owned his own business for most of his life, and he never had to have a boss or answer to anybody but himself. And there's been times in my life where I wished, you know, I wish I would have taken over his shop. But after a while, I was doing music full-time, so it wasn't something that I ever pursued. Now, when I was in college, I worked at a local 3M factory in Nevada, Missouri. And it was this gigantic building, and I think the only thing they made in there was shelf paper. And I was hired during the summer as a temporary employee. And this was in the early 80s, and I think they paid like 15 bucks an hour. And for back then, for a college student, that was really good money. And all I would do all summer long is paint the pipes. Like, they had all these pipes throughout the building that were covered with dirt, and I would wipe them off and paint them white. And so it wasn't very hard, but it was boring, and I had to get up at 5 in the morning to do it. But it was the best paying job I could find at that point, and it helped get me through college. Another thing I did back then was I got hired at a sporting goods store. And that was kind of like it sounds, you know, I waited on customers and sold them shoes. And it really wasn't too bad until they told me they couldn't pay me anymore. And this was kind of when it all started with my bad luck and making money. And they informed me, because they had gone bankrupt, that, this week, I don't know what to tell you. And so I quit and went back to work for my dad. After that, I moved to Houston, where I was part of the backup band for an artist named Morgan Cryer. And after about a year, he told us that he didn't need the band anymore, and so I had to go find something else. And I thought that would be easy because, you know, by that point I had a college degree. And so I went to a Texas art supply store and put in my application. And I put on there that I had experience in retail and a bachelor in fine arts degree. And they said, "Nope, no thanks." And so I went to a record store at the mall. And I told them I'm a musician and I can pretty much tell you something about every single album you have in this place. And even though this was around like 87, 88, I was told by the manager of the store that, I'm going to have to hire Pedro instead of you. And I said, "But Pedro doesn't really know shit about music." And she said, yeah, I know, but I've got to hire him because, well, you know. And so there I was without a job, and I was newly married at the time. And I remember that we literally had $5 to our name. And we went to a grocery store and spent that $5 on some hamburger. And I was freaking out, and then I saw this ad for an inventory service. And so I went, applied, and they gave me a job. And I think I made like 10 bucks an hour. And it wasn't really very difficult, but you would have to work sometimes at 3 in the morning. And you would ride in a van with a bunch of other people. And you would go to a store like Walgreens and count stuff. But the worst part of that whole experience is that I was forced to wear a dress shirt and khaki pants.
No! God, please, no! No!
Yeah, that was pretty bad, but still not the worst job I've ever had. Of course, the best job I've ever had is probably now when I'm just an artist and I sell my artwork. And I also had a long stretch there from like 89 to 2000 where I was just a full-time musician. But that all came crashing down in the early 2000s when I tried to have a solo career. And I signed with this label out of New Jersey and I did an album for them and they were supposed to give me all this money, but they went bankrupt. Kind of like the sporting goods store. And so I was completely screwed and had no money. Well, I was living in Kansas City by this point, and somebody told me, hey, there's this manufacturing plant, and they pay really well, and they need a faux painter. And I didn't really know what that was at the time. And it was basically taking something like wood or plastic or metal and making it look like it was something else. Like, I would take a piece of foam and make it look like it was rock. Or I'd take these big wood panels and make them look like sheets of marble. And at first it was kind of fun, and then it was just okay. But after a while, there's only so much time you can spend in a factory before you begin hating your life. But every day after work, I would go home and I would write and I would record in my basement. And I ended up putting out two more crunchy albums. But those were some kind of dark years for me, and eventually I got laid off at the manufacturing plant. And once again, I'm like, well, what do I do? And I thought, well, I know how to paint. I'm good with a brush. How about painting houses? And so I got hired by a painting company there in Kansas City. And to answer your question, Corey, that is the worst job I ever had. And I did it off and on for years, and I gotta say, still to this day, painting houses sucks ass. It is a thankless, unrewarding, low-paying job that will suck the very soul out of you. Now, honestly, painting interiors isn't that bad. At least you're inside. But doing the exterior of a house is a whole different thing. You're dealing with bushes and trees and the wind and bees and insects. And when you're up on a ladder 30 feet in the air endangering your life, and somebody drives by in a car, I guarantee they look at you and go, oh my God, I'm so glad I don't have to do that. And that's what I say today every time I see a guy outside painting a house. So I'm sorry to disappoint you if you had this image of me that I was this rock star that never worked a day in his life. Because I put in my time, I did my share of shitty jobs, but you know, I have no regrets.
You're sure about that?
Oh, wait a minute. Yes, I do. I have all kinds of regrets. In fact, I think I regret all of it. But anyway, thanks for the question, Corey. Moving on. How about I do a little What's on TV? This is where I tell you what I've been watching here lately and what I have not been watching. And why don't I just go ahead and get the whole Jimmy Kimmel thing out of the way. His show was one of the things that I haven't watched in years. And one of the reasons why I stopped watching his pathetic late night show was because of the reason his show got canceled. instead of just trying to be funny, he just made his show into a commercial endorsement of the Democratic Party. And that's fine, I can just choose not to watch, which is what I did. But the problem for Kimmel was that when you choose to run off half your potential viewing audience, and you're being paid millions of dollars and your ratings go in the tank, your bosses at Disney may decide, you know, you're not worth the hassle. See, I actually think Disney was probably fine with him spewing lies and hatred every night in his monologue. He did that crap for years. Remember during COVID when he said that if you hadn't been vaccinated, you didn't deserve to get hospital treatment and you were welcome to die? Or when Tucker Carlson got fired from Fox, he was all for it and thought it was awesome? Yeah, Disney was fine with that as long as the ratings were up. But when his viewership became less than a lot of popular podcasts, Disney was just waiting for a good excuse to can his ass. And so that's what they did. It had nothing to do with the government or Trump. Disney's become one of the wokest, most far-left companies on the planet. You think they're going to listen to Trump? But suddenly the Democrats are in an uproar over free speech. But suddenly, because Kimmel gets fired, you got people like AOC and Chuck Schumer screaming about censorship. Weren't those the same people that wanted Trump kicked off of Twitter and Tucker Carlson fired from Fox? Yeah, but one of theirs gets slapped down and suddenly they're all concerned about the Constitution. So I could talk about this all day, but let me just say this. I haven't always hated Jimmy Kimmel. I used to like him on The Man Show. I thought he was funny. He made a great movie called Windy City Heat. And I even liked his late night show for a while. But kind of like Saturday Night Live, when you sell your soul to the devil just for a political agenda, 9 times out of 10, your show's gonna turn into shit. But the best thing that I saw that summarized this whole Kimmel situation came from the Babylon Bee. They had a fake headline that said, "People who were okay with murder outraged by the cancellation of a TV show." Now that is ironic and funny at the same time. Maybe if people like Stephen Colbert and Saturday Night Live would come up with stuff like that, their shows wouldn't suck so bad.
Very pointed and provocative commentary.
All right, no more politics for the rest of the show, I promise.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, well, what else have I not been watching? Well, once again this year, I did not watch the Emmys or the MTV Video Music Awards. I used to watch the VMAs and then I would tell you about it so you didn't have to watch it. But now I can't even watch it. And now I'm the same way with the Emmys. And it's not even that I just don't care anymore. Which I don't, but it's more that I am just absolutely repulsed by the people on these shows. I mean, for years, I've just seen the music industry as incredibly lame, and these award shows are just always the same. You know, you're gonna get Beyonce or Taylor Swift, and a bunch of rappers, and then just a bunch of trendy bullshit. Like, I've noticed the latest thing is these female singers with voices that sound like 5-year-old children. And it's real breathy, like, "I had a boyfriend and he broke my heart." And then I think, who likes this stuff? And then I see they're headlining the arena in Denver. So who knows, but I am done watching music award shows. Now, as far as the Emmys, that has more to do with just my hatred for Hollywood. The last thing I want to do is watch a bunch of celebrities and movie stars sit there and applaud themselves. They all take themselves way too seriously, they're all pompous, and they're unable to laugh at themselves. And so, no thanks, I will pass on that crap. Now, something I did watch was a 4-part documentary series about the Live Aid concerts back in the 80s. You remember that? Bob Geldof from the Boomtown Rats got all these superstar musicians together and they were going to save starving people in Africa. And I know they raised hundreds of millions of dollars, but I just always remember hearing that the money and the food never got to those people in Africa. And Gildoff, who is now much older and he's got gray hair, but he is still very, very serious, he tries to tell the story of what actually happened. And I get it, you know, anytime you get politicians involved and government and all that kind of stuff, it's going to go probably not the way you planned. And of course, Bono from U2 had to get involved, you know, because he's Bono and he's very, very important. And as you can tell by my sarcastic tone, it was around this period of time that Bono really started rubbing me the wrong way. And the weird thing is that I really liked the first probably three U2 albums. I thought Boy and October were just great albums, and they were very emotional and kind of spiritual. In other words, I liked the mullet version of Bono. But then the bigger they got, it just seemed like Bono turned into this self-important, douchey rock star. And the more I saw him and U2 on MTV, the more I just went, I can't stand this guy anymore. And it finally got to a point where I started asking people, hey, do you know any way I could get this free U2 album off of my iPhone? Oh yes, it was free. They were giving away their music because, you know, they're just so kind. Even though Apple gave them, what, $100 million to do that? So I've been kind of cynical all these years about the Live Aid concerts, and especially Bono and Gildoff. But I'm older now, and after watching this, I don't know, I could kind of see that they meant well. And maybe they're not as big a tools as I thought they were. I'm sure they did some good, so I'm going to cut them some slack. And I'll just try and remember U2 for what they used to be, which was a pretty cool band. Every time I hear that song, I think of that show that they did at Red Rocks in Colorado back in the 80s. And they videoed it, and they also put it out as an album. I think it was called Under a Blood Red Sky or something like that. And it was a great live album, but the video of that show was amazing. And part of the reason is that it was just at Red Rocks. And I'm telling you right now, if you ever get a chance to go to that place and see a show, you will never forget it. It is the coolest concert venue in the world, as far as I'm concerned. It's about an hour from where Alex and I live right now. And you kind of drive up into the mountains and you start seeing these amazing rock formations. And it's just beautiful up there. And you park, and then you have to start walking up all these steps. And you keep climbing, and you have to start dealing with the altitude. And I'm going to guess that there's been several heart attacks happen with people trying to get to the seating. But it's all worth it, because once you get in there, you're kind of surrounded by mountains and these rocks, and it's just incredible. And I've always dreamed of playing there, and since I'm not dead, I'm still gonna believe that there's still a chance.
No.
Something else I watched was the documentary on Netflix about Charlie Sheen. And for some reason, I couldn't wait to see this. But as I'm about halfway through it, I'm like, why do I care about someone that's such a train wreck? But I don't know, I guess that's kind of what makes him interesting. But maybe there's something in all of us that thinks, I wonder what it'd be like to be that out of control and survive it. But I think he had a pretty weird childhood. I mean, when your dad's Martin Sheen, you're probably not going to grow up normal. But he seems to have cleaned up his act for now anyway, so good for him.
Guy's a weirdo.
Now, one thing that I have not watched yet, that I have no intentions of seeing, actually, is the new Spinal Tap movie. And you may be surprised to hear me say this, because I'm a musician, and obviously I loved the first movie. It was a classic, and frankly, it was one of my favorite movies ever. But have you seen the previews to this thing yet?
It's not much to watch.
Oh, they just look so old, and it just doesn't look funny. And it looks like they're just kind of rehashing a lot of stuff. And I'll be honest, I've watched a couple of reviews of it, and like I thought, they just say it's kind of terrible. And I saw a guy on YouTube that compared it to Happy Gilmore 2. And so sadly, I will not be going to a theater to see this. But I'm sure it'll probably come on Netflix or Prime Video eventually, and I'll check it out. And I'll probably sit there for an hour and a half and not laugh. Which is a shame, because the first one was hilarious. But Spinal Tap 2 does not look good at all.
Tick-tock, it's not too late to run. Again.
Like men,
feels like pain. There's no time left to waste. Let's ride these horses straight to hell. Till it's time to say farewell. Say when.
Amen.
Let's just rock again.
Okay, I got a question from Dan Cunningham on Facebook about a month ago, and he said, "Hey Monty, are you ready for some football?" And my answer to that is, of course, I'm always ready for some football. The only problem I have is I have this huge love-hate relationship with the NFL. I love watching professional football, and I have been since I was 10 years old. But over the recent years, the commissioner of the NFL, Roger Goodell, has gradually tried to ruin it. And there was really no need for it, because it's always been a great game, it's always been fun to go to. But the league has increasingly become more political and more woke. And my question is, why? Because when there is a game with two teams that are filled with mostly black players, and hundreds of thousands of white people go to watch, why do we need to be told to end racism?
I don't know!
But you know what? I watch it anyway, because I'm a Kansas City Chiefs fan. And so far this season, it has not been fun. They have not played well, they have not looked like themselves. So this may be a long, frustrating season for me. But that's the thing, it doesn't matter, because I just keep watching. Maybe because I'm just a glutton for punishment. But you know what the worst thing is about watching football, or pretty much anything on TV? It's the commercials. Oh yes, I am still frustrated by the commercials. And I know I've talked about this before, so forgive me, but it's actually gotten worse. I mean, it's literally gotten to the point where there are no longer any white people on commercials.
What's wrong with that?
Am I wrong? Anybody out there, let me know. Am I wrong? Because all I see is mostly black people, or a black guy and his Hispanic wife, or a couple of Asian people trying to sell you insurance. And it's just weird that you don't see white people in commercials anymore. With one exception, it's almost always a white male, and he's a dumbass. No, seriously, look for this. If there's a white guy in a commercial, he's sitting there like he's clueless and everybody's sitting around him going, "What's your problem, dude?" And he's just like, "Oh, I don't know." I mean, it's obvious to me what they're doing. And it's gotten so ridiculous that you can't even have white hands anymore in a commercial. Like, you know, on some of them, you don't even see people, you just see their hands. And I've noticed recently that now they're either brown or black hands. So if you're white and you even had aspirations of being a hand model, forget it. Because it ain't happening. And you know, for me, I've always had kind of this secret dream of maybe someday being an actor. But you know, maybe this is my chance. Because I actually think I could play a really good dumb guy. I know I come off that way to a lot of people anyway. So playing an idiot might not be that big of a stretch for me.
Absolutely.
So if there's any casting directors out there right now, keep me in mind. But, you know, I'm sure there's going to be people who think I'm a racist because I just like to see a white person in a commercial once in a while. But I'm not, nor am I entitled or think I have white privilege. In fact, most of what I've gotten in life, I've had to work for, and it's been a struggle. In fact, right now, Alex and I are struggling to scrape together every penny we can just so we can move and start a new life for ourselves. And we appreciate everyone who has helped us so far. But there's times when we go, are we really going to be able to pull this off? And that's when we just have to trust God and stay focused. And that's pretty much what you have to do with anything. Just stay focused. And keep believing in what you're doing. And I have to remind myself of this all the time. Especially when it comes to my art or music. I know everyone's not going to like it or get it, but I just have to keep doing it because I believe in it. And if there's something you believe in that you really feel strongly about it, keep doing it. Stay focused.
What are you talking about, you deranged idiot?
All right, before I go, I wanted to just say again that if you'd like to help Alex and I move to Houston, we have that GoFundMe page. We'd sure appreciate a donation. If not, we understand. Just pray for us. Also, if you'd like to help us by buying a painting or print, go to my website, MontyColvinArt.com. And I recently just put up all the artwork that I did for the Long Way Back to the Moon album. I'm selling all the original paintings that I did for the cover and stuff that was on the inside of the album. So if you'd like to own part of Galactic Cowboy history, you can find it there. And all the money that I make from that will go to our moving fund. And if you have any questions about any of that, just drop me a message on Facebook or something. But Alex and I are focused on getting to Houston by the middle of December. And I think it'll just make everything a lot easier as far as the band. If there's a video to be made or we want to play a show or do a tour or record, I'll be there. And I'm really excited about all the possibilities.
Thank you for sharing. I had no idea.
Now, I usually end these episodes with a song, and today is no different. Because the other day, Alex shared this song with me, and I listened to it, and I said, "This is so awesome. I think the people on my podcast would love this." And so I'm not even going to tell you who it's by. I'm just going to play it for you and let you figure it out. I think after a while you'll recognize the song and you're really going to dig it. So enjoy and let me know what you think. But that's going to do it for me for now. I'll be back soon with more fun and mayhem. But until then, this has been Monty saying take care. Don't let anyone tell you what to like. Unless it's me. And
rock on!
Today's gonna be the day they gonna throw back you. By now you should somehow realize what I gotta do. I don't believe in what I feel, so I do about you now. Back is what is on the street as a fire and your heart is out.
I'm sure you had it all before, but nobody really had a doubt. I don't believe what anybody feels the way I do about you now.
This has been Monty's Rockcast.
The end.